Mine and Jane's lecturers at Bible school used to say, a text without a context is a pretext. A text without a context is a pretext. Or more straightforwardly, if you isolate a Bible verse from the intent of the author, you're at risk of making it say something that was never intended. Fully distilled, it can't mean now what it didn't mean when it was written. We can apply the Bible to ourselves now, the better that we understand what it meant then. And yes, it can be a challenge to get it right, because the Bible is a tasty smorgasbord of literary forms, songs, poems, stories, letters, prophecies, visions, even legislation, all authored by the Holy Spirit through the pens of people living in places the majority of us will never visit, in cultures that no longer exist. That can make it rather tricky to understand. But sometimes all that's required of us to gain understanding of the scripture is to read a few verses before, a few verses after. Now, during the lockdowns, especially the first, there was a blizzard of Bible verses landing in my inbox, Facebook, WhatsApp, probably the same for you. I think if we were to chart them, Psalm 91 would be close to the top. Psalm 91, verses from that psalm say, if you say the Lord is my refuge, and you make the Most High your dwelling, no harm will overtake you. No disaster will come near your tent. And then there was 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, seek my face, turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, I will forgive their sin, and will heal their land. And then the main contender for the number one slot is Jeremiah 29, verses 11 and 12. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. This last passage, Jeremiah 29, 11 and 12, is the one I want us to dig into today. And despite being 2,600 years old, it speaks loudly to where we are today, but perhaps not in the way that we think it does. So to comply with my Bible school lecturer, let's give the passage its context. The Jews, the people through whom God had chosen to make himself known to the rest of humanity, had consistently, in the vernacular, given God two fingers. God had issued them warnings, telling them that their precious temple and all their religious practices were worth nothing because they deserted him, their first and true love. He warned that they were operating contrary to the covenants they had with him, and that the slope they were on was a slippery one towards destruction. He warned them that if it continued, he was going to take a wrecking ball to their existing society and structures and then rebuild. But the prophets who carried these warnings were killed, exiled, or ignored. So, true to his word, Jerusalem was invaded by the local bully, Nebuchadnezzar, and shortly after that, a large portion of the society, mainly the academics, ruling classes, religious leaders, the elites, were carried off into the empire of their enemies, Babylon. Babylon, where, according to Psalm 137 and Boney M, they sat down and wept. They wept because of the trauma they'd suffered and the situation they now found themselves in. Invaded, evicted from their homes, dragged captive across deserts and mountain ranges for 4 months, till eventually they reached Babylon. They wept, longing for the homeland, Jerusalem. The verses we read from chapter 29, verses 11 and 12, are a few lines from a letter that Jeremiah the prophet had written from Jerusalem to the exiles. The whole of the letter goes from verse 4 through to 23. What was currently happening, the invasion, the deportation, was exactly what he had prophesied previously. He'd also told them that their time in Babylon was not going to end quickly, because quick fixes hadn't worked. In fact, he told them, many of you, you'll not see Jerusalem again. Jeremiah told them, that which you have left behind is not part of your future. And I don't know about you, but I hear Jeremiah's prophetic voice of 2,600 years ago speaking to us in our current situation. Do you hear it? In exile, they could no longer go to the temple where true worship took place. The temple, their focal point of prayer, teaching, worship, study, was gone. But this wasn't what they wanted to hear. Cue the prophets, those tuned into the anxieties and soulish aspirations of the people rather than God's very alternative frequency. Don't worry, the false prophet said. This will soon all be over. Hold on, they said. Soon you'll be back in Jerusalem. Worship will be restored, religious festivals happening again. You and everything that was taken will be returned. Resist your captors. Don't submit. And I confess, this is how I and others, I'm pretty sure, have read the Jeremiah 29:11 passage. What I understood when I read it was this: God's plan is for good. So obviously all this suffering and hardship we're going through will end soon and our flourishing will begin. All I need to do is just hold on, because that which I'm presently experiencing, my current circumstances, aren't going to last. God's goodness is just around the corner. In my mind, that was the message of Jeremiah 29. Verse 11. And isn't that what we want to hear? Doesn't it fit perfectly for our COVID context and our mindset? If we grit our teeth, if we wear our masks, if we keep our distance, wash our hands and wring our hands, we will soon be back to where we comfortably were. And that's why in lockdown 1.0, Jeremiah 29:11 ended up in so many inboxes. But that isn't the message of Jeremiah 29:11. The message is actually God's goodness, in fact, his best for us, is not around the corner. It's available now. The Jews sitting in Babylon were longing for the temple, longing for the rhythms and the routines, the worship that characterized their culture and regimented their life. They sat waiting. Their desire, give us back what we know. And in that liminal space, that space between the comfortable familiar, which is past, and the unformed, unknown future, in that space, they sat, wringing their hands, nursing aspirations and anxieties similar to ours, waiting, like us, all this to be over, waiting to turn the corner into God's goodness. So, what are the plans for the Jews in exile that Jeremiah is referring to when he writes, I know the plans I have for you? Are they to hunker down, don't engage, don't integrate, do the minimum, hide your shekels under your bed? No. Were they perhaps plans which would be activated when they finally did manage to return to the city they longed for, Jerusalem? No, the plans were to be activated now, a blueprint for living from now into the future. How do we know? Well, the immediate plans are recorded just a little bit earlier. Verse 5, build houses, settle down. plant gardens and eat what they produce, marry and have sons and daughters, find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there, do not decrease. To clarify, he's not just talking about procreation. Now that sounds overwhelmingly hope-filled. The circumstances were, by any measure, awful. Invaded, deported, robbed of all livelihoods, torn from family. But the good plans were, live into this season, invest yourselves and your resources and expect a harvest. Your prosperity is within your reach. In verse 12, we read, you will call on me. That's a corporate you, not an individual you. So you as a people will call on me. But the exiled Jews had lost their temple. How on earth could their spiritual practices continue? How, having shunned God, could they now get right with God? Where would they pray and study, worship? All of this had always centered on the temple. In Babylon, there was no temple. Well, with a new season comes the need for a new wineskin. A wineskin symbolizes man-made structure. New wine symbolizes the new move of God. So what was the new structure which facilitated the new move of God? The structure that emerged in Babylon to facilitate what God was doing then was the synagogue. Synagogue, that's a familiar term to us. Synagogue, it's a Greek name. But what I find interesting are the Hebrew names for it. Bet Tefillah, which means houses of prayer. Or sometimes Bet Midrash, which means houses of study. Not study houses or prayer houses. These weren't buildings constructed for the purpose of prayer and study. They were homes. Homes where meals were cooked, the kids played, where those seeking God also gathered to pray, to study, to worship. I find that fascinating. This was how the Jews of 600 BC had to inhabit their uncomfortable, unfamiliar space. Build, plant, marry, don't decrease, increase. Give it all you've got. God was giving his people permission, or rather instruction, to thrive where they were whilst they waited, even if they didn't want to be where they had found themselves. One author I read suggested an angle on Jeremiah 29:11, which sounded a little unlikely, i.e. he was trying to make the text say something now that it didn't say then. So I asked my Hebrew scholar friend if he would read the verse in Hebrew for me. Not that I speak Hebrew, but there was a particular word I was listening for. He recorded it for me, so have a listen. If you've been around Christians, you'll probably have come across this word. What word do you hear that you can't see in the equivalent, English equivalent of in this text? So what word do we hear within this text, or do we read? What word do we hear in what my friend Saki is saying that we don't actually see the English equivalent of in the text? If that's not clear, sorry.
Ki anochi yadati et hamachashavot asher anochi choshev alechem na'um yaveh. מחשבות שלום ולא לרעה, לתת לכם אחרית ותקווה.
Now, the only word I know from that reading is the word shalom. Did you hear it? I hope you did. And shalom, we know, means peace, but we don't find the word peace in the English version we've just read. You might occasionally find it in some other versions, but we don't find it in the version we've just read. Neither do we appear to find the concept of peace in the verse. In the place of peace, most translators choose the word prosper, but As we just heard, Jeremiah actually wrote Shalom, plans for Shalom. Yes, Shalom means peace, but it's a multidimensional word, which in essence means nothing missing, nothing broken. How rich and how deep is that? How worth meditating on? God's offer was nothing missing, nothing broken. That was God's plan for a group of people who had been ripped out of the fabric of their society and planted among their oppressors, cut off from family, from livelihoods, from all the plans they had for themselves, for their loved ones. In that context, counterintuitively, God's offer to them was that they could live lives where nothing is missing, nothing is broken. That was God's offer to them. But is that offer still on the table? Is it open to us? Some of the verses that we've come across just over the past couple of weeks make it abundantly clear that it is still on the table. Isaiah 9, verse 6 and 7 says, and this is in the prophecy about the coming of Jesus, and his name shall be called the Prince of Shalom, and to Shalom there shall be no end. And a good translation of the angelic proclamation that was given to the shepherds was, or is, God's Shalom rests on those whom he has chosen. Like the Jews in exile turning their homes into houses of prayer and houses of study, are we ready to dedicate or rededicate firstly our hearts, then our flats, our rooms, our house to be a house of prayer, a house of study, making all available to facilitate the new wine of this new season? As we wait on God in this week of prayer, we should make it our objective as we enter the waiting room to hear from God. What are his plans for Shalom, for ourselves, our families, our companies, the ministry has called us to, our church? The book of Jeremiah has a theme of God disrupting his people's plans, implementing his own, confronting complacency and requiring action. How has God interrupted my plans, your plans, in order that he can implement his plans, which will see us entering into his Shalom, where nothing is missing, nothing is broken.